It's now 1:30. I would like to call the order of the April 7th, 2021 meeting of the TPA Citizen Advisory Committee pursuant of the TPA Emergency Order 2021-01. The Palm Beach TPA is conducting this meeting virtually using the Zoom webinar platform. The TPA select this platform because it does not require the public to purchase or download any additional software or equipment to attend this meeting. Aside from the Zoom webinar platform that the participants will use to attend remotely, the public will have no discernible difference in their ability to watch the meeting from that of someone physically attending the meeting. Instructions to join this virtual meeting as well as contact information for the TPA staff member to assist you are provided on the published meeting agenda. Please note that although some members of the CAC are attending the meeting in person, committee members will be appearing at today's meeting remotely either via webcam or via telephone. Additionally, scheduled presenters and the CAC liaison will also be appearing via webcam or telephone. At this time, please call roll.
Before I call the roll, I want to remind members present in person that you can unmute your microphones by hitting the base. When the red light is on, it means you're live. And then those that are present virtually, if you can please unmute your microphones. Okay, I'm sorry. I do have another member that joined as an attendee. Okay, so Terry Brown.
Here.
Mark Bruner.
Here.
Wen Dang.
Here.
Greg Fagan. Michael Fitzpatrick.
Greg Fagan here.
Thank you. Michael Fitzpatrick. James Garvin. Jason Mankoff.
Here.
Albert Richwagen.
Here.
Ryan Rossi.
Here.
Paula Ryan. Myra Newman.
Here.
Richard Vasilotti.
Here.
We have a quorum, Madam Chair.
Okay. Are there any modifications to agenda at this time?
No, Madam Chair.
Moving to the next item, are there any changes to the minutes? Okay. If not, can I have a motion to adopt the minutes as presented?
So moved.
Second.
So I had a motion by Terry, I believe, and a second by Paula.
Okay. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Okay. All those opposed, nay. Okay. Motion carries. Next item, general public comments. I will summarize your public comments procedure for this virtual meeting. Written comments may be submitted online at the website provided in the agenda. Verbal comments may be made by virtual attendees using the raise hand function feature in the Zoom platform. And then lastly, verbal and or written comments may be provided by an in-person attendee submitting comment card available at the welcome table. Are there any comments at this time?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. Next item are, I do not have any comments. This is a section where it's comment from the chair. So we can move on to item F, which is the CAC liaison's report. So at this time, I'd like to invite Jason.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. So I'm going to go over the liaison report for April. We have it up on the screen as well. So you can see it on the screen as well. There's the first item is the committee member service recognition. And this is to recognize Glenn Harvey for 14 years of service as our representative on the CAC. And we appreciate his generous commitment and personal time and knowledge to furthering the communities in Palm Beach County. And we just greatly appreciate his time and service for 14 years is a pretty good stretch of time, and we really appreciate that. And he brought a lot of knowledge and insight to the CAC during his time. The next item is the bicycle month summary. We had a presentation scheduled for last month, but we ran out of time, so we weren't able to get the full presentation on all the events that were happening in March, but we are providing a summary to you today. And that is that With March being Bicycle Month, a total of 13 Florida Bicycle Month proclamations were passed, 11 of which are done by municipalities. And the TPA participated in a total of 4 events and promoted 8 in total. Some of you might have been out in and participated in some of those events, and we appreciate your participation and interest in bicycle in Florida Bicycle Month. Let's see. The next item here is member designated projects for surface transportation authorization. This is a fairly new item that we just added and became aware of, and members of Congress are able to submit specific projects for funding to be included in the 2021 Surface Transportation Authorization legislation, and submissions are due to Congress by April 16th, 2021. And please reach out to your TPA committee liaison to coordinate TPA support for a project you may be interested in. Next is the 2021 AARP Community Challenge Grant, and that's the AARP Community Challenge Grant provides small grants to fund quick action projects to help communities become more livable for people of all ages. And the deadline to apply is fast approaching, with April 14th, 2020. And we have a website here for more information, aarp.org/community challenge. There's a few more items on the next slide here. That is the April TPA Governing Board meeting. That the next meeting will be held on April 15th, that's next Thursday, at 9 a.m., both in person and virtually. And to view the agenda packet and meeting details, visit palmbeachtpa.org/board. FDOT local agency program, construction checklist and specifications training. FDOT is hosting a LAP virtual training on April 21st, 2021 from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. And this is a course intended for local agency projects, project engineer and procurement staff who develop bid packages, construction specifications and contracts and other related documents for construction. And if you recall, we have 2 grant programs, the local initiatives and the transportation alternative program. And through those programs, one of the ways to implement projects is through the LAP certification. And this is one of the trainings that you would go through to learn more about that. Next is the National Bike to School Day. Communities across the country will be walking and rolling in support of safe, active travel as part of the 10th annual National Bike to School Day on May 5th. So to register, registration is open to families, neighborhoods, and schools. And to register, you would go to walkbiketoschool.org/registration. And the last item here is the high visibility enforcement funding. And FDOT offers enforcement agencies funding contracts for high visibility enforcement to improve pedestrian and bicycle safety. So applications are accepted on a rolling basis, so it's continual. And to find out for more information, you would go to alerttodayflorida.com/HVE. And that concludes the liaison report.
All right, thank you. Are there any public comments on this item at this time?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. Does any committee members have any comments or questions in reference to the liaison's report? Paula Ryan.
Thank you. I was just curious as to whether or not we have a list or know of anything that any members of Congress may have submitted, or have we, is there a place where we can check it out? I think they're due.
Let's see. We may have some people in the audience. We have Nick or Andrew might have some information on a list of projects that may have been submitted as part of this. It's fairly new. We just kind of learned about, I learned about it on Monday through our staff meeting. And so I'm not sure if there's any projects actively being proposed or listed somewhere.
Did you ask who's thinking about submittals?
Well, it says that they're April 16th. They're due, so that's next week, I think. Yeah, I think it's next week. So I know that we're constantly looking for money for any projects. If this is something new, is, you know, I was just curious as to whether or not any members of our local delegation have put something forward that we as a TPA or perhaps any other city or municipality may have asked for. Do we know?
If it's all right, can I respond?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Thanks, Madam Chair. Nick Uren, I'm the director for the TPA, for those of the folks watching online that may be unfamiliar with me. It is very new. And I'm going to be somewhat, I don't know, take a stab at humor and say the federal government seems to want to collect your income taxes by the 15th, and then they're going to come up with ways to spend them on the 16th. I don't think that's true. I think what's happening right now is we're in a reauthorization year. We're nearing the end of year six of a 5-year surface transportation bill. We're looking at additional funding and repurposing some funding from the existing program. And it's been a long time since Congress had anything that looked or sounded like an earmark. And so this conversation seems to be trending in the direction of member designated projects, which is an opportunity for individual congressmen and women to say, this is important in my district. Can we provide some federal assistance and make it happen? All that to say, we're hopeful that it's additional funding, that it doesn't negatively affect what we've been told is it should not negatively affect the formula funds that we rely on to do things like our local initiatives program, like our transportation alternatives program. It should be additional funding for either acceleration of projects that are in outer years or potentially implementation of new projects. We've had a handful of people reach out to us at the TPA, primarily asking if their projects are not in the TIP, how do they get in the TIP so that they can become more competitive for this potential additional funding? It's probably too early to give you a list. We could talk a little more on April 16th when we see who's able to get all their ducks in a row and submit to their local congressional delegation member, and then who ultimately gets put forward by the congressmen and women. That's about the best I have for you right now.
No, I mean, I just, as you said, if it's new money, then it's an opportunity to reach out to the congressional district and say, here, can we move this into the queue? So,
sure.
Thank you.
All right. Marjorie, are there any comments virtually?
I don't see any hands raised, but I just want to make sure I'm not missing anyone physically raising their hand. No, Madam Chair.
Okay. So we're going to move to item two, action item. There's a motion to adopt an amendment 4 to the fiscal year 21-25 TIP. And Jason.
All right. Hello again, everyone. So, as the TIP coordinator for the Palm Beach TPA, that's Transportation Improvement Program, this afternoon I'm going to review amendment number 4 that will amend a total of 3 projects in our Transportation Improvement Program. And so the Transportation Improvement Program is our 5-year funding program for transportation projects within Palm Beach County, the designated area for the Palm Beach TPA. In this amendment, it is an action item that requires a vote that will be taken at the end of the presentation and the discussion. One thing to note is in the agenda package, there was an error in the description of listing of indicating that there was four projects in total to be amended, but there is actually 3 projects. That was just minor omission in the agenda packet in the description. So I just wanted to make that correction. And in total, there's 2 FDOT projects and 1 SFRTA project, which is the operator of Tri-Rail. So to begin, the first thing I'd like to go over is when a TIP amendment is needed and what is impacted and what is not impacted by an amendment. So first is A TIP amendment is required when a project is added or deleted in the Transportation Improvement Program. In addition, there's other criteria that you see on the screen here is there's a cost increase of a project of more than 20% and is over and is equal or greater than $2 million. There's also the requirement that triggers an amendment of a change in the scope of work where the length of a project is changed by a half a mile and 20% of the project cost, or the number of through traffic lanes is altered or changed. What is not impacted by an amendment is any other projects that is listed in the Transportation Improvement Program that is not a part of the amendment is not changed in any way. The only projects that are changed are the projects that are listed in the amendment, in which I'll now go over as part of this amendment number 4. First, I'll go over the two FDOT projects, the first being I-95 and at Lantana Road. For this particular project, there was a PD&E study that's planning, development, and environmental. There was a round of considerations for different configurations, and the preferred alternative that was selected was a diverging diamond interchange. And so to begin development and design of this particular project, there is this particular amendment is to increase the design funds and the project length to accommodate the diverging diamond interchange preferred alternative. To give you a better illustration of what this project is, here is an illustration of the existing roadway and what's out there today and the proposed diverging diamond interchange, the improvement. And you'll note that there's an access road that goes underneath the bridge to accommodate traffic, leaving some of the commercial properties on one end of the interchange to get to the other. So the road would go underneath it and around to facilitate that movement. And just to note, this project, when it was kind of being flushed out and you saw the different alternatives, that was back in April of 2020 when the consultant and FDOT came forward to provide illustrations and demonstrations of the different alternatives being considered. And this is the preferred alternative. The second FDOT project being amended as part of this action is at US 27 and Ocalante Road intersections. So along this corridor, this proposed amendment would increase the type of construction material earthwork that's being used to accommodate the auxiliary lanes at the intersections along this corridor. So these auxiliary lanes are acceleration lanes to facilitate getting up to speed to get onto this particular corridor. So that's why you see the length increase from almost 2 miles to an extra mile, which accommodates those acceleration lanes as part of this amendment. And this last project is a transit project. And this particular project is to add additional funds to the Tri-Rail Northern Layover Maintenance Facility that is currently programmed in our Transportation Improvement Program. This money is coming from the Delray Beach Trolley Project that was proposed and initiated, but then was requested to be canceled by the city for the trolleys. And then because these are transit projects and transit funds, the funds are then required to be, they're kept within the hopper, they're kept within the transit funding. And so the next project in line to receive these funds in our transportation improvement program was the Tri-Rail Northern Layover Maintenance Facility. So this amendment formally takes those additional funds from the Delray Beach Trolley Project and adds them to this particular project. And that's what you see before you today. Those are the three projects that comprise this amendment number 4, and I'll take any questions at this time.
Yeah, thank you. I believe I saw Myron's hands raise at the beginning of the presentation.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, thank you. And my question really is we have to take these as a package, right? We don't vote on them individually. It's all or nothing, right?
Well, what is your concern? Maybe we should address what you're thinking of in terms of the projects.
Well, I actually don't have a concern. I mean, I'm indifferent to the changes. I mean, they're perfectly reasonable. It's more a question of the process.
Okay, so for this, I get different requests from different agencies, be it a transit agency, perhaps the Turnpike or FDOT, and I assemble them all in a single amendment to present them all at once as a package. I could do amendments for each individual project and process them that way if it's needed, but I do it this way just for efficient course of business of packaging them all up, presenting them all at once. That's really just a preference of being efficient and effective of putting everything together in a single package just to present it all at once. But if there was a decision to pull one of them or change them, I imagine we could entertain that, and it is possible. But for the purposes of processing all of the amendments as required and requested, I just put them together in a single presentation. But
the only thing that really raised the question in my mind was the fact that we have two of the projects are surface transportation. The other is a tri-rail thing. They might have been done separately.
I think maybe Marjorie can have a point of clarifications.
Yes, Madam Chair. So I did want to note, we do present this, like Jason said, all in one package, but the committee, I was going to say board, I'm sorry, the committee is able to make a motion to recommend adoption for each separate item if they want to go one by one, or they want to group it together, and then you can take it as separate motions. There will be a roll call vote for each one, just so we are clear on what the committee would like to do and the voting for each one.
All right, thank you. And I've been following these projects, obviously, from the inception, especially the I-95 and Lantana Road DDI. And I believe that the change in the design cost is reflective of during the PD&E process, when the project team came to these boards, and each board have comments. And I believe that some of those comments were incorporated in the design concept that's being shown. And therefore, I guess it's related to the increase in costs to make that realization, to go through the design process of that. In addition, the US 27, please correct me if I'm wrong, as I'm looking through the package, it's in construction, you have a change order that needs to move forward, and that needs to, it just needs to happen because you're trying to finish a project. Am I correct?
For the Ocalante Road project.
Yes. Yeah, I believe I see the funding is in fiscal year 21, which is right now.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, they decided to change the project, increase the length of the project to accommodate these acceleration lanes. And I believe that they were part of the project, but they changed some of the construction material and some of the, just how they were going to build it. And so that's what triggered the change. And you can see from the line item that the change is identified as a single funding source and a single change. If I could go back, I could show
you.
Yeah,
I believe it's the description is for earthwork. So it's additional fill material that's needed for to complete the project.
Yeah, they had a different type of earthwork that, or construction material proposed. They realized that they needed something probably maybe a little different. I can't speak exactly to the details of it because I'm not that well-versed in the construction material, but I do know they do give a little more detail in the agenda package. The FDOT request letter will discuss a little more in detail. I kind of try and generalize it to just earthwork and the project length, but ultimately they're auxiliary lanes for acceleration to get up to speed to enter this highway safely.
Yeah. And I think lastly, it's the reallocation of the trolley funds. Essentially, a lot of these municipal government probably doesn't have operation funds to operate the purchasing of new trolleys amidst COVID and the loss of revenue. So I'm looking at all these three items as transferring of funds, which is an action item that the committee has to take.
I do have another hand raised, Madam Chair. Actually, I have two. I have Terry Brown and then Paula Ryan.
So if we, Paula Ryan, and then we'll go to Terry. I don't know who was first.
I'm fine. Terry can go first. This is not the first time we've seen each of these. Like when changes are made, we get presentations throughout as they discuss it. This, as you mentioned, Madam Chair, is the reallocation of funding. So it's not like this has not been open to the public and the public has not been engaged in communication, because that's the whole process. And because it does look very familiar and the subjects are stuff we have discussed in the past.
Yeah. So, Terry Brown.
Yeah, could Jason, put the drawing back on the Lantana scheme there. I know that I'm not as experienced, of course, as the chair. The way she speaks, she knows a lot more about these things than I do. But my question is, and we call these acceleration lanes, and we want to move people through that area as quick as possible, and I assume as safe as possible. But this situation with Costco and the Solid Waste Authority transfer station and Highridge Road, there's not going to be any other lights other than that one light, is the way I see it on the drawing at Highridge Road. So will it slow down people trying to get in and out of the areas on either side of that zone where you have Sunset Road, which is actually the entrance into Costco? And is it going to be safer coming out? I don't know if anyone's ever been there before, but it's pretty harrowing to get out of there from that particular side. So will it be better for places like Costco and the transfer station, or will it slow them down? We have to go around that loop a couple of times on the underpass, like a PGA. How would you envision that to work?
I'm sorry. I
just wanted to clarify one thing, between a distinction between the two projects, and I may have misspoke, but I want to clarify it. The Ocalante Road is the acceleration lanes or the auxiliary lanes, where here what you're seeing is a frontage road that's being built new to accommodate the commercial traffic act,
Costco. I know that, warehouse. But there is a road going into Costco now from the I-95 westbound.
Yes,
so you're saying there's going to be another road between the I-95 Lantana Road off ramp before you get to Costco? Is that what you're saying?
So I can. I'm very familiar with this project.
I thought you would be.
I used to live in the area, and I also used to serve on I used to be the chair of the Tactical Advisory Committee. So, and I believe that this is a circulation.
My focus to understand is safety, getting in and out of these areas that are on either side of Lantana Road.
Right.
And you're talking about moving more people through there at a faster pace. So I'm wondering how that's going to work. How's that going to mesh?
Right. So part of the PD&E study is to look at different alternatives on how they can move people efficiently through this interchange itself. And there are safety components, which and I believe that was also presented to this committee for pedestrian and bicycle access, along with vehicular access. As you can see, I'm not the engineer of record, but I do have an engineering background that you have quite a bit of access management as being controlled not only at the intersection, but the median curb cut that's available there. Because right now you don't have a physical median that's there, right? And so that's an improvement to what's existing. In addition, some of the turning radius, especially to the Costco, is it's widened. It's a lot wider, and it's an improvement of what's out there right now. I believe that because this is a conceptual design, you're not going to be able to see the details that's there in a final design. But I know that there has been a significant amount of traffic analysis that's not only been done at the interchange itself, but regionally to see how it's being impacted. Part of this project to improve this project, to improve this interchange, is to alleviate the additional congestion that is projected onto the I-95 mainline itself. So this overall, I believe that this is an improvement of what is existing and that is proposed.
Just answer one question. You're going west from the east, and you're east of I-95, and you're going west, and you want to get to Costco. So you come off that loop, and you're on the right side. How do you get into Costco? You have to go back down on the service road?
Sunset Road on the north side is, if you, I'm not sure if you can move the icon around it, but there is a, what we call a pork chop, for the lack of better words, that you are allowed to make a right into the Sunset, the service road into Costco that way. The other access point that you have is you can also go to High Ridge Road and then turn right, and it's a double right into the Costco retail.
Yeah, I think people on High Ridge Road would prefer that it not have more traffic on it. So you're coming over the I-95 and you're on that westbound lane. Before you get to the light, you're saying you can make a right off of the Lantana Road into the service road into Costco?
Yes.
And that doesn't show that clearly.
No, but I'm sure the project team can send us additional information and we can share it with the committee. And I think like
some of these loop service roads, you have to go underneath the overpass and then go into wherever you want to go, and it lengthens the trip and it's probably a lot safer. I agree, but I'm just wondering, from a practical standpoint, from a motorist standpoint, has Costco voiced any concerns?
Andrew is at the podium and maybe he can give us a point of clarification.
Sure. Andrew Euler, Deputy Director of Program Development. Terry, what you see on the screen here is from, we pulled this from their PD&E on their website. Yeah. So you can just do I-95 at Lantana. And this was one of the options presented to you all before too. Yes, they had direct coordination with the property owners on both sides. And I think actually this access road came out of that discussion. So, and what our chair said was correct. So when you come off of, when you're heading westbound and you come on the Sunset Road, you're still making that same left into Costco. What this does though, instead, really, when you're leaving Costco, you no longer have to try to take a left and go eastbound on Lantana. Instead, you can take a safer route along Sunset Road underneath the underpass there and then head up, and then you can take a right onto Lantana. Yeah, so also doing that, hopefully you may also relieve some traffic on High Ridge Road if people are trying to get on the out of that other entrance on to Costco, which you can't see on this map here. But so you probably won't see too much difference on High Ridge Road. There won't be much traffic deviating to there. They could now take a safer route to get on the Lantana heading eastbound by going underneath.
I agree. It's much safer. All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you. And I believe you can still make comments on the PD&E website that is specifically for this project to the project team. Margie, I
have another hand raised.
Yeah, I saw Michael.
Yeah,
right. So Michael.
Yes, my question is similar. It's not, how do you get to Costco if you're on the east side heading west, is how do you get to the Solid Waste Authority?
Yeah.
Or alternatively, if you're heading, if you're west and heading east, how do you get to Costco? Is that when you use the service road? And my real question is, how long does it take to educate motorists that this is the preferred entrance?
I don't have that answer. I believe, you know, as anybody that uses a system, it takes a little bit of a learning curve as you have a new new road or new signal or new intersection. But again, if you have project specific questions, I would defer it to the project manager that is managing this PD&E project. But at this time, if we can help us be refocused on the action item, which is to, this is a transfer of funds on existing TIP projects, right? The three action items.
Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion.
Sure.
If there's any other questions?
Yeah.
I'll second the motion.
Thank you. Let's hear the motion first.
I'd like to make a motion to recommend adoption of amendment number 4 to fiscal year 21-25 Transportation Improvement Program, TIP.
Thank you. And the second is?
I'll second.
I'm sorry. My phone was off. I did have a second by Mark Bruner.
Okay. That's good.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Right now, we don't have any further discussion, so it's going to be a roll call.
Yes, Madam Chair. So for the record, there are no public comments on this. I just double checked to be sure. And then I can do a roll call vote if you're ready. So the motion on the floor is to recommend adoption of amendment number 4 to the fiscal year 21-25 Transportation Improvement Program as presented. And then for those attending virtually, if you could please unmute, and those in person, just make sure your microphone's on when I call your name. And please either state yes or no when I call your name for the vote. Terry Brown?
Yes.
Mark Bruner?
Yes.
Wen Deng?
Yes.
Greg Fagan?
Yes.
Michael Fitzpatrick?
Yes.
James Garvin?
Yes.
Jason Mancroft?
Yes.
Albert Richwagen?
Yes.
Ryan Rossi?
Yes.
Paula Ryan?
Yes.
Myra Newman?
Yes.
Richard Vasilotti?
Yes.
It passes unanimously, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. So the next item is information item. The Florida East Coast Railway FEC Quiet Zone update. And so right now, James, I'd like to invite James. Very nice to meet you. The TPA Transit Coordinator.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, or actually good afternoon, everybody. Again, my name is James Reinhardt. I am the lead transit coordinator for the Palm Beach TPA. I'm going to be providing an update or quiet zone update for phase 2 of the Brightline construction on the FEC corridor in North Palm Beach County. I will mention that I do have, I believe Kim Delaney is listening in. So at the end, she is our point of contact that's assisting the TPA with establishing the quiet zones and working with the municipalities. If there are questions that I'm not able to answer, I will kick them over to her at the end of the meeting. So again, to do a quick refresher of what a quiet zone is, this definition pulled from the Federal Rail Authority. And a quiet zone is when railroads have been directed to cease the routine sounding of their horns when approaching public highway grade crossings. And they are, they cease to do that, so blow their horns due to an increase in safety measures established at those crossings. And the purpose of the quiet zone is to reduce the risk of incidents at the crossing by adding additional supplemental safety measures to that can reduce the risk of an accident lower than if a horn is blown. Safety measures that are typically added are exit gates or medians at the crossings. And the hope for those gates and medians is to be able to reduce that risk. So as we can see on the screen, with a quiet zone risk, if there is no quiet zone established and no horn being blown, we can see that the risk is very high. This is data pulled from Indian Town Road in Jupiter. And when we add the horn to the horn being blown as the train goes to the crossing, it reduces the risk index by approximately 50%. By adding a roadway medians on each side of the crossing or quadrant gates, or an alternative form of like blending those medians and gates together as like depending on what is feasible at the crossing, you'll see an 80%, somewhere between an 80 and 82% decrease in risk from initially if there is no horns or quiet zone safety measures established. And by adding all those risk reduction improvements, the goal is to create a quiet environment for residents that are near the corridor. So an example of what I mean by adding quadrant gates. So we can see on the left-hand side, there's the two quadrant gates for vehicles entering the crossing. And that in that case is when a train does need required to blow its horn. And the reason why is because there's still the ability for a vehicle to try to merge left and try to cross through the gates when a train is coming to, if they're being impatient or just want to try to get through the crossing and not wait for the train to come through. On the right is an example of a four quadrant gate, which is a supplemental safety measure that the FRA recommends that completely seals the corridor off by enclosing, by providing gates not only for the entrance, but also the exiting of the rail crossing. And so the FRA requires that these, for a quiet zone to have these supplemental safety improvements to be added, but they only are accounting for vehicle, for risks of vehicle incidents with a train, that is not really addressing pedestrian and bicycle safety. And so what the TPA has done as part of being a funding partner with phase one of these, of the Brightline corridor improvements in South County, has been adding additional infrastructure such as sidewalks and ADA tactile plates at the entrance or as they're approaching the crossing, additional pedestrian crossing gates if the existing crossing gate will or a new crossing gate does not extend over the sidewalk, flashing lights, and then signage on the sidewalk to notify pedestrians that they are approaching the crossing. And so right now, like I said, they have completed the phase one of the Brightline improvements and the quiet zones have been established in South County coming up into West Palm Beach. And they're going to be, they're starting on the double tracking process in North County, moving up north as they eventually their goal is to move to all the way to Orlando. But within Palm Beach County, they're going to be establishing safety improvements at DaCuesta, Jupiter, Palm Beach Gardens, Lake Park, Riviera Beach, and additional locations in West Palm Beach from 23rd Street moving north. And that's all the crossings between here and the county line. And so progress to date on this work, they've been able to, they've confirmed and identified which crossings those that are going to need improvements. They've engineered safety measures for those crossings, analyzed the risk reduction so that a quiet zone can be established once the improvements have been installed at the locations. And then funds have been allocated to begin the construction and coordination with the FRA. And so when it comes to actually establishing the quiet zone, and what Kim Delaney at Treasure Coast is helping us with is creating a timeline from now until we can establish the, actually get the notice of establishment for these quiet zones. So Kim will be working, helping develop a quiet zone corridor workshop that she'll be hosting in summer of 2021, and then doing local government presentations this coming fall and helping them file a notice of intent to establish a quiet zone in next, starting in next summer. And all that can happen while we're waiting for the construction to complete. And so once the construction and inspection is completed, hoping in winter of 2022, based on what we've heard from Brightline, then we can start submitting notices of establishment to establish these quiet zones and make them active. So for any other updates about the quiet zones and the construction on the Brightline for the FEC and Brightline corridor in North County, you can go to palmbeachtpa.org/rail. We have provided links to Brightline's construction site, which is the second bullet there, the gobrightline.com. We also have a map with all of the crossings that you can click on and learn about what they're proposing, what kind of safety measures they're proposing. And then as we get notices of construction starting, we're adding that to the map as well. And you can pull all that information again from Brightline's website, or you can reach out to Kim Delaney for more questions regarding the coordination with the municipalities for these quiet zones. And that's what I have. Are there any questions?
Thank you, James. Margie, are there any public comments on this item?
No, Madam Chair.
Are there any committee members that have their hands raised?
Yes, I have Mark Bruner with his hand raised.
Okay.
Mark? Yeah, this is more of a question on implementation of these quiet zones. The first is, once all the infrastructure is in place to implement the quiet zone, are they do they become a quiet zone 24/7, or the local municipalities have the ability to say, well, you know, we feel better if the horns blow during the day, but not at night? Second thing is that it's, you know, again, there are situations where, you know, if something's on the tracks or whatever, the trains may need to blow their horn, and those things are not prohibited by a quiet zone, are they? Are they things that can still be done?
I can answer that question. Again, I've established West Palm Beach Quiet Zone several years ago. Short answer is, even though the quiet zone is established, if a train engineer feels that it is unsafe in this any scenario, it is their obligation to blow the horn, because it is a safety mechanism to warn users of the system that there's a train coming. And especially when these trains are going at 79 miles per hour within this area, and of course 125 north of I believe Martin County. When it's a process that when cities establish these quiet zones, and if you can go back a couple slides on the steps that James you mapped out, it's, you have to establish, each local municipality has to establish a notice of intent, and that notice goes to your adjacent cities, your neighbors, and then you have to wait until Brightline or complete all their construction, then the staff of that agency has to go and inspect it based on whatever standards, MUTCD. And I do have a question about that in a second. And once that's all established, you actually have to schedule a meeting with FRA or FRA representative to actually come down and inspect it with you, right? And then you can establish, but it is a very detailed process to even get to a point where the local municipality can say, okay, we have the notice of establishment. Then the train will blow its horn for a period of time before, you know, it goes quiet, right? Because people think that, oh, we have a quiet zone, that they stop blowing. That's not true. And I think it becomes an educational piece to, like for us and our, you know, as we represent each cities, that the quiet zone just means that under the rule, they are still obligated to blow its horn. If that answers your question. So short answer is, yes, they shouldn't be blowing their horn, but if there's something that's unsafe on the track, or maybe they're testing or whatever that may be, they're still gonna blow their horn. If you have a station, for example, City of West Palm Beach, there's a station in downtown, the train is still gonna blow its horn as it's entering and exiting the station. So I think it's, you know, we just need to be aware that quiet zone doesn't mean that it's quiet 24/7.
Thank you very much. The devil is in the details of implementation on a lot of these, and sometimes it helps to get a little bit into the weeds on how these things go. So I appreciate the information. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there anybody else that has comments virtually, Margie?
I do have that Kim raise her hand. I don't know if you want to allow her to talk.
Yeah, or
if
hi,
you
Kim. Wanted...
Okay. And then Kim, you should be able to unmute on your end. There we go.
Super. Hey guys. So Kim Delaney with Treasure Coast. Thanks for a chance to chat with you. Pardon me, on quiet zones. The only other thing to mention, that just to add, the question was, is a quiet zone automatically 24 hours, or can it be a variable? And the answer is local governments can decide. If a local government decides, geez, we want the train horn blowing from, you know, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., but we want it quiet during other hours, it can make that decision. We don't have any experience with that. All the local governments have chosen 24-hour quiet zones, but it's the prerogative of the local government. Okay.
All right, thank you. Sure. So I have a question in reference to implementation. The MUTCD is getting updated right now, and I serve on the National Committee for Uniform Traffic Control Devices. And there are going to be some changes that's coming through as it's, adoption for signage and pavement markings, especially around the railroad crossings itself. So my question would be, is that going to be incorporated in a set of plans or drawings that's already been designed? Because it looks like the implementation is, or the notice of intent is 2023. And then ultimately, this is the year that the MUTCD is being updated, because it hasn't been updated in 14 years now.
I am not sure. So Kim, if you're still on the line, if you know any more about that question, I'd appreciate your assistance.
So it's a really interesting and timely point that you bring up, Wen, because one of the things we've reached out to DOT to assist with is a conversation about safety best practices. We have, frankly, West Palm and Del Rey are really good examples of how to get advanced notice, better pavement markings beyond the minimum standard, highest quality community outreach. And so we are actually pulling together a community outreach and, pardon me, kind of a community informational work session, if you will, drawing on best practices that we can find. And so thank you for volunteering to assist with that discussion, because it's really even better when you have local talent that has seen the project from the implementation side, as well as now the regulatory side. So when that's, that is actually a subject I was trading emails with DOT this morning on. What we want to do is get to the best of our ability ahead of whatever the best models are gonna be, because we all know this corridor has kind of a very troubled history with respect to the crashes that took place, and nobody wants to repeat that experience. So it's iterative. You know, the timing of these projects is never perfect. They're always going to be developed under whatever the current regulations are. But I think we have the ability to look beyond the minimum requirements and take the best practices that are going to be hopefully developed in part through that effort to implement on the corridor.
All right. Thank you. I'll share some information that I have, because I actually serve on the National Committee and the Markings Committee, and there are some changes. So I'll share some exhibits and stuff like that so that you can relay it back to the technical team.
That would be so valuable. I really appreciate that. And I'm sure I'll have some follow-up questions for you, Wen, as we kind of navigate forward. So gives me a chance to reconnect with you, since I miss working with you professionally on a regular basis.
Thank you. All right. If we don't have any other questions, right? No other questions.
Other hands raised, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much, James. So moving on to item 2C, the TPA Community Profile Dashboard. James, again, welcome back to the podium.
I hope Madam Chair, I think you skipped the 561 plan.
Oh, I apologize.
It's okay.
But it looks like James is on for the next two items. So the 561 plan overview.
Yep. Thank you. So to, I guess, again, my name is James Reinhardt for the record. I'm the lead transit coordinator for the Palm Beach TPA. I'm going to be providing an 561 plan update. Okay, just for a refresher for everybody in the room, the Palm Beach TPA's mission and vision is to collaboratively plan, prioritize, and fund safe, efficient, and connected, a safe and efficient connected multimodal transportation system. That mission and vision was adopted as part of our 2045 long-range transportation plan. In addition to that that adoption of that mission and vision, we also evaluated a series of corridors to develop an enhanced and frequent transit network and ped bike safety, and then also for first and last mile transit connections, which we identified as the 561 plan within that, the 2045 LRTP. The 561 plan consists of five north-south corridors, which includes the commuter rail, like Tri-Rail and Coastal Link rail lines, also then US 1, Congress Avenue, and Military Trail, and six east-west corridors for the Okeechobee Boulevard, Forest Hill Boulevard, Lake Worth Road, Boynton Beach Boulevard, Atlantic Avenue, and Glades Road down in Boca Raton, and putting those five north-south corridors and the east six east-west, we then developed that one connected system. So the reason why we chose these corridors is because 69% of the county's population and 94% of non-farming jobs are within 2 miles of those corridors. In addition to that, these have the highest transit ridership routes for both PalmTran and then, of course, including Tri-Rail's commuter service on that route as well. In addition, these corridors have been identified as part of the 2045 Regional Transportation Plan as key connections to in the South Florida, Greater South Florida region, to be able to connect to Broward and Miami-Dade's transit services, and also the connections with Tri-Rail and then Brightline once they are back in providing service. And so now that we've discussed like what that 5-6 plan or refresher of what that plan was and why we chose those corridors that were adopted into the LRTP, what we've done so far is we have completed in 2018 a US 1 multimodal corridor study where we identified a preferred transit alternative of a mixed BRT service. And since the staff identifying that recommended alternative, we have allocated preliminary engineering funds for designing enhanced transit stations within the FDOT existing right-of-way. And we have prioritized funds for construction of transit signal priority at intersections. In addition to transit improvements, there have been funds that have been allocated for construction and preliminary engineering for roadway improvements. One of them is the reconstruction in Riviera Beach and Lake Park, and then two lane repurposing projects, one in Boca Raton and the other in North Palm Beach. So in addition to all the work that's being done for US 1, another corridor within our 561 plan was the Coastal Link, also the FEC, also known as the FEC, where Brightline operates its service on. FDOT has completed a crossover project between the FEC and the CSX railways in Palm Beach County to provide that connection between those two rail lines. And as mentioned in my previous presentation, Brightline is underway with its double tracking for phase two in North County to improve capacity of the corridors or of the rail service for both freight and passenger rail. And soon there's going to be the start of the construction for a Boca Raton Brightline station costing $46 million and of investment into that station. $10 million was contributed by the city of Boca Raton and 16.4 of that was through an FRA grant. And if you would like to learn more about the Coastal Link and the future of commuter rail on that rail corridor, the Southeast Florida Regional Transportation Council is going to be hosting a workshop on April 30th from 9:30 a.m. until noon. If you have any more questions or want to know a little bit more about that, you can reach out to me and I can forward more information to you as I receive it. So we've discussed those two corridors. And the third one that we are starting to look at is the Okeechobee Boulevard and State Road 7 corridor study. That one is our first of our east-west corridors that we're going to be doing a study on. We're kicking off the study in spring of 2021. We're finalizing the work order now to begin the internal kickoff for that. We're going to be hosting advisory meetings and public outreach events in summer and fall of 2021 so that we can develop a roadway and transit alternatives and land use analysis by the end of the year so that we can provide recommendations to this committee and eventually to the TPA board and when hopefully in winter 2021 or early 2022. So those are the three big things that are happening right now to show that this 561 plan is transforming from just lines on a map that we've identified in our long range plan into active projects. And so for the next steps on this plan is that we're going to continue doing the TPA is going to continue to lead corridor studies to identify roadway and transit alternatives for each one of those corridors. And then from there, roadway owners will continue to look through and do design and feasibility, and the transit agencies conducting detailed analysis for the operation of that service. And while all those things are happening, we need to still keep our mindset on how we're going to fund all of this transit and roadway improvements. And that is, as we know through existing projects, there's federal funds and there's state funding for these kind of projects. But as our peers in Broward and Miami-Dade, they've been able to establish a local revenue stream for these kind of improvements. And so continuing to look into how we can pursue funding and coordinate the land use and the facility owners and operations agencies together so that we can continue to pursue this 561 plan and eventually implement these projects.
All right, thank you.
That's what I have.
I believe Paula Ryan, you have a comment?
Thank you. No comments, but to your last point, I understand at the last TPA meeting, there was a discussion about perhaps doing what Broward and both Miami have done in terms of taking a proposal to the voters. Is that correct? Am I misinformed?
Yes, that was brought up at our last TPA board meeting about the discussion of the existing surtax as it's sunsetting in 2026 on pursuing a surtax that's not on top of that one, but a continuation that will have funding available for transit improvements overall transportation improvements in Palm Beach County.
Is there going to be a committee? I mean, how is it going to be pursued moving forward? Is it something that the TPA can take a leadership and proposal role, or you're going to need to bring in the county and
at this point, the board has requested the TPA to generate a kind of a cost estimate for roadway, bike, ped, and transit improvements that would potentially be addressed by a surtax like this, and we've been asked to share that information with them. So the TPA staff is working through that at this time.
Great, thank you.
All right, thank you. I believe I see Myron's hands raised.
Yes, and I just want to note for the record, Madam Chair, that we don't have any public comments on this one.
Okay, thank you. Myron?
Yes, as I understood at the beginning of the conversation, Okeechobee Boulevard is one of the east-west corridors. But State Road 7 is a north-south road. That was not listed as one of the north-south things. Is the intention to add State Road 7 for one of the north-south corridors?
So the reason why it was not added is because the portion of State Road 7 that is being studied as part of the Okeechobee Boulevard corridor study is to provide access from the Wellington Mall at Forest Hill up to Okeechobee at State Road 7 and then continue into downtown. And so it's providing that access, and rather than doing a full-on corridor study of the entire extent of State Road 7.
So it's a local issue, not a county-wide issue.
I think it's when the TPA identified these corridors, it was in has a lot to do with land use and the access that's available within these routes. And I believe that when I looked at the map, I see that it's within the borders of already high access PalmTran routes, right? For example, we know Route 1, which is along US 1, Dixie here is the highest ridership. But also there's like east-west connectors, like 46 that goes to the mall. But ultimately there's also those routes that's along Military Trail that has really high ridership. And I believe that was one of the, I do think that it's identifying a segment of State Route 7 makes a lot of sense, because the Wellington Mall is so underutilized as it is right now that it becomes a potential hub that connects people out west and give them an option to go east. Because I think that that's the issue that we're running into. We have really good north-south connector, right? We have Route 1, we have Palm Grand, we have Brightline, we have the Turnpike, we have I-95, but east-west, we're very challenged. And I believe that the plan address, how do we bring regional access into more of the coastal communities? Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, that is correct. And the Wellington Mall is identified as a transit hub currently with PalmTran service, because several east-west routes coming from the shoreline going west meet and transfer at the Wellington Mall. And that's also the transfer location for residents coming from Belglade and Pahokee that are taking the route out. That's where their transit route stops at for the transfer as well. And so it'd be a continuation of using that transit hub, but providing an enhanced transit service.
Marjorie, do we have anybody else?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right. We're going to move on to item 3C, the TPA community profile dashboard.
Hopefully nobody's tired of me yet. I promise this is my last one. So many of you might remember the Palm Beach TPA had created community profile profile summaries for each of the communities within the county. And we have taken that, and they're all as PDF documents that could be downloaded from our website. We've taken that information and updated it and then put it into a dashboard format, so it's a little bit easier to navigate from one community to the next and then still be able to have a downloadable deliverable for your community as well. So if on our homepage, we have added a notice at the bottom that says that, or where you can click on it, to click on that dashboard. We've also added it into our homepage. If you go to at the top, plans and resources, and scroll down to the bottom, and it'll say community profiles. And you can click on that and it'll direct you to the dashboard. And so as we open up the dashboard, the first page is a socioeconomic summary. It defaults to the counties, the countywide summary. And in that summary, there is a, if we scroll down, there's a map, context map, and then there's key population information, environmental justice population information, commuter data as well for average commuting by mode, and then also average travel time and travel distance, then education attainment and employment information as well. And this report can be downloaded as a PDF. If you scroll back up to the top, there is a download button up in the top corner. So that's the first tab within this main window. The next tabs are maps for roadway ownership information, total lanes, bicycle facilities, pedestrian facilities, frequent transit network, and then our current 2021 to 2025 TIP projects. So that we can, you can navigate between those different windows to learn a little bit more. And then in the on the left-hand side, we have the list of municipalities and county districts that are all in alphabetical order that can be navigated through. And then one last thing before we do a demo on how to use this dashboard, up in the top right-hand corner, I apologize, my face is in the way, there is three buttons. One is a search button that you can type in an address and search that address if you want to look specifically at your location. Or you can, in the middle button is a legend, and that legend is different for each map that you can click on and learn about what's being projected on the map. And then if you prefer not to look at the gray base map as the default, you can switch to a streets map or an aerial image as well. So how this works is let's click on Boynton Beach as an example. And we click on that and it'll zoom into Boynton Beach's location. And all the maps will update as well. So we can see the TIP projects right now. If we go to, let's go to total lanes as another example, it's clipped the total lanes to that area. And so you can identify roadway information from that as well. And then if you want to navigate from that community to another one, let's say Royal Palm Beach as another example, that's my home village. It will navigate over and reset the map based on the conditions within that project. Sometimes the data takes a little bit of time to load. There we go. And all the maps, again, will update based on what community you've selected, as well as the socioeconomic summary, if we want to click on that as well. And so we can see that it's updated, and it's updated the information based on that. And then if you want to reset the map back to the county, all you have to do is click on the highlighted community and it'll reset the summary and the map back to the countywide image. And it might take a minute. There we go. And so a couple questions that we had the last time I presented this at the other committees was if this was eligible to be used with a screen reader. And I had it tested out and JAWS was performed the best, but all the other screen readers were able to use this. And and so that was one of the key takeaways that was requested for us to research about this. Any questions?
All right. Are there any questions from virtually?
I don't see any hands raised, Madam Chair, and I don't have any public comments on this matter.
Okay. Thank you. This is great. Kudos. We have some administrative items. It seems like it's a lot, but it's actually was deferred from our last meeting. I do not believe that staff will be presenting on any of these items. Okay. And then, and that's it, right? This is Jason to present on the board and committee handbook. Is that
the only one we have for administrative that there's a presentation for.
Okay. All right. Jason.
Okay. So we do an annual update to our governing board and advisory committee handbook. And so I'll follow suit with how we presented it to the TAC. This is the cover of the of this document. It is a pretty good resource and a refresher if you're a new committee member or board member. You can go through it and learn quite a bit about what the committee makeup is, our core products, the partner agent and the partner agencies and staff. There's also a good glossary of the terms and acronyms that are used throughout transportation planning. So it's just a good way to keep abreast of what all of the acronyms are as we go through the process of adopting a long-range transportation plan, which is the LRTP, or our five-year planning document, which is the Transportation Improvement Program, which is the TIP. And so I just Want to make you aware of the Governing Board and Advisory Committee Orientation Handbook. And that concludes.
Thank you. Are there any public comments?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. And I don't see the virtual.
I don't see any virtual hands raised either.
All right. Thank you. So our next meeting is May 5th, 2021. And I believe this concludes our meeting. Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.